You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood. This is your host of the most, Nikki Kalula. We have an amazing singer-songwriter extraordinaire joining us tonight. We welcome Miss Melissa Polinar. Did I say it correctly?
Close enough. Yeah. Polinar.
How do you say it? Polinar?
Polinar, like pollinating.
Okay. That's different. Okay. That's cool. Yeah. My bad. Yeah. You know what? My name's Nikki Kalula and people mispronounce it all the time. So I apologize, but on behalf of all people with complex names, I'm sure we all have been through it before. I'm sure you can relate where there was a substitute teacher in elementary school, and when they came to your name, there was a slight pause. It was like ever so slight, but you knew, oh, okay, that's me. I'm going to raise my hand and just save them the
embarrassment. I mean, to be honest, there's like other ways to pronounce it, but I've just kind of gone with Polinar because that's just what everybody, you know, blanket. It's easy to pronounce here in the Western world, but
right.
I'm Filipino. So if you were to be authentically pronouncing it, it would sound differently too. It'd be just
so
like
how would that pronunciation be? What would that be?
I mean, Polinar.
Oh, that's cool. That's way cooler.
Okay, cool. With the R.
I love it.
But yeah, I mean, I grew up in Texas, and it's just kind of like a thing. I immigrated.
You Texified it.
Yeah, pretty much.
You had to. What city in Texas did you grow up in?
I'm in the suburb off of Dallas-Fort Worth, so I'm North Texas.
That's awesome. And like, how did you get, what was the moment of zen that made you realize you wanted to be a musician? You remember, was it a record that you heard? Was it music in the home? Somebody playing a record? What was it?
I mean, I think it's a combination of so many different things. I mean, I grew up in a family that loves music. None of them are musicians by trade. They're not.
Wow.
They don't necessarily, at least in my generation and my parents' generation, it wasn't really like a thing to pursue music at all. Typical Asian.
Yep.
Expectation of medical field or a lawyer or an engineer kind of thing.
Yep.
And so I wouldn't really say that I'm a rebellious kid, but I just kind of subtly kind of did my own thing in the back, like row kind of thing.
You know, I'm going to sing in the room in the back and just find my own voice slowly without you really knowing.
Yeah, but at the same time, my family loves music. I mean, if you know anything about Filipino culture, they love music. So it's just kind of a weird juxtaposed thing where, like, yeah, don't pursue arts or entertainment as a trade, but there's a love for it. So I think one of the most pivotal points in my life that I maybe decided to make it as a career was when I started writing songs, to be honest. It wasn't the singing.
That's awesome.
The singing thing is great. Like, I can always sing even if I weren't doing this for
doing it. Yeah, right.
Yeah. But I think that was around 15, 16, and I found a love for it for some reason. I didn't really like model myself over somebody. I mean, I grew up listening to a lot of gospel music, a lot of folk musicians, you know, and also, you know, the standard Whitney Houston and Mariah Carey and all that stuff. So I'm like a mixture, like a hodgepodge of soulful, but like have a love for like songwriting. So the folk music comes into play. And my early stint in the industry officially was in Nashville. So Nashville, oh, wow. If you know anything about Nashville, it's not just country, even though country is the main bread and butter over there. It's
a hodgepodge of styles. You have soul and funk and reggae. You kind of have a little bit of everything.
Yes, but it's not recognized as that worldwide, though. You know, always like there's always like the underground of those things. But it's I think the commonality of Nashville is that it prides itself by dubbing itself as the home of the song.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny about Nashville? I played Bonnaroo a couple times, and the first time I went to Nashville, I thought it was going to be this huge city. And you realize, oh, Broadway is like really not a very big street. It's like kind of a small community, but it's now extended even farther around Nashville to become a much bigger city. But the actual drag of Nashville is actually pretty small. It's a small drag, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird vibe, but it's very familiar to me because I grew up in the South, you know? I didn't... Yeah. Set off to do LA or New York from the get-go. It was Nashville.
And so you graduated high school and went straight to Nashville? Is that what you did?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I dabbled into, I tried to do both, tried to fly back and forth. And it was interesting because, you know, I was very determined to make the music thing work. So I quit college officially like after a year and a half in. And then I moved to Nashville briefly for like 2 years. And then that's how I just did my crash course in songwriting. Like,
wow.
My public, it was under a larger company. And my publisher at that time, back in the day when they were very active in developing artists, not anymore.
Right. Right.
My publisher at the time, she would just book me with anybody and everybody who was down to work with me. And I had no name. I had, you know, some Asian random kid from Texas and like I wrote with country writers, producers, to pop, to people from LA who flew into Nashville for a brief time. And then I get paired up with them, gospel producers and writers and artists. So I basically just dove in head first, and I was like this willing student. That was pretty much my formidable years during the industry. And then after that whole thing, I went back to, after my contract was up, it was like cumulatively 3 years. So 3 years doesn't seem like a long time, but
no, that's a long time, especially when you're developing as an artist. Absolutely.
Yeah. And after the 3 years, the people that I worked with in that company pretty much left.
Wow.
So, yeah. So I was just kind of like, nobody was, you know, the cause for Melissa Polinar, you know, who were executives and stuff, like they left. And this was before social media, before YouTube, before all these things just kind of came about. So I went back home and regrouped. And I guess I told myself, let me just go back to college and like figure things out. And then in that process, as while I was taking my college classes, I dabbled into YouTube. And that's kind of where the second surge of my career started, because I didn't know what YouTube was. A friend of mine suggested it, just like, oh, just do covers and, you know, but I kind of refused to do a lot of the pop covers, like the what everybody, because at that point I wrote so many songs under my belt.
You're like, why do I need covers? I write my own songs and they're better than some of these covers.
Well, I mean, I don't know if they're better, but it's just like, I felt like part of myself is like I told you at the beginning, is that it was songwriting that made me want to pursue music. It wasn't necessarily just singing.
And real quick, before we talk about some of that, where did you learn how to sing? Did you take chorus classes? Did you take voice lessons? Did you sing with family? Was it church? How did you learn how to sing just from the beginning?
I would say church. Like, awesome. I mean, good old church. It gives me like school stuff is one. And also like the, you know, family gatherings and sing. I think if anything, it just gave me confidence, enough confidence to sing up front.
Right.
It's not necessarily because I was like formally trained. To this day, I haven't been formally trained. I think the only
That's crazy. And I'm telling you that from someone that's been formally trained for years. Like I started singing in the church, sang in a professional children's chorus as a kid. That children's chorus is where Billie Eilish came from. But I was in the early years, which was getting it established and kind of taught us like how to like, you know, cut your teeth and kind of get gigs. So like I did crazy things like singing at the Grammys when I was 11 and singing in Carnegie Hall when I was 10. But I thought it was normal. But the funny thing is you do go through this like kind of like these levels of learning that, okay, you're on this path. And when I hear you sing, it's crazy that you have never had any formal training. You never cut, you like, you just must have learned from listening and hearing singers, right?
Yes. And also too, I guess along the way, you know, people give me pointers, like certain breathing techniques, if you want to go technical about it. And then also like when I started singing in studios, I had to learn from the producers that I work with, because it's a way different type of singing. And I keep telling all the younger kids now, and you know, it's different when you sing live and it's different when you sing in the studio. It's like a totally different art form.
Yeah, I always tell people it's like the answering machine syndrome. It's like when you hear yourself on tape, you're like, what, that's what I sound like? Versus like when you're singing, you're in it and it's like you have like this environment that you're creating. But when you're in a studio, it's like under a magnifying glass. So it's like you kind of have to learn how to approach it in two different ways.
Yeah. And also, too, it's just what I loved about singing in studios, it actually trained me to be more precise. Right. So with my tone, my delivery, whereas the live singing, which I've had training since the beginning of my life, I guess, ever since I can remember, it's just swag. It's just confidence, really, you know.
Yes.
Even if you're a little flat, even if you're a little off something, off whatever, it's just
you can make it work. You can sell it.
You can make it work. Yeah, sell it. And I think to have both of them, is both of those aspects, is really great, and that's what I try to do. Also, side note, I think the reason why I kind of credit, I guess, whatever vocal skill I have to also classically trained in the violin for a decade.
Oh, wow. There's the guitar influence right there, too. That's awesome. That's awesome.
So I was classically trained by this Romanian professor for like a decade. And as a matter of fact, I thought I wasn't going to be, I knew I loved music, but at a certain point in my life, I thought I was going to do violinist and be in an orchestra.
Wow.
Yeah.
And well, then, it's because like you're groomed. You're groomed to like learn from the people that you're learning from. So I'm sure he was like, this is the life. This is what you need to do. And then you end up breaking free of that. I totally know that. I mean, a trained opera singer. I learned opera. Wow. And so I actually thought I was going to be like an opera singer. And then when guitar came in my life, it was like, that was the kind of like the outlier. It was like, okay, this is changing everything. So tell me what that transition like was for you from like learning violin, wanting to be in an orchestra at one point, and then breaking free of that and learning guitar.
There wasn't really like a weird transition. I think it just happened naturally, you know.
That's awesome.
I started writing songs, and then I think part of the main catalyst is that I got offered a publishing deal at 17. Wow. So that's the reason why I went to Nashville. And so that kind of reshifted my focus. So it was
how long were you playing guitar before you got that offer?
Like 3 years, maybe.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. So you just must have been dedicating a lot of time that became like, you know, your best friend, your therapist, all in one. And then you started writing, because like that's also a vibrant time in any person's life. Those are your teenage years. So like those are your angsty years, those are your loner years, those are your finding yourself, you're finding your voice, you're going through an upheaval of emotions. Tell me like what guitar meant for you. Like when did it come into your life, and like what, how did it kind of give you this open vessel to have this voice for songwriting?
Well, also to backtrack, when I got signed as a songwriter that transferred me to Nashville, or like led me to Nashville, my primary instrument of writing songs was keys, actually. So I'm so out of touch with the keys at this point. Like I can still dabble but I just haven't used it in so long. And the reason why I transitioned over to guitar was also pragmatic. I can carry one anywhere.
Yeah.
And then Nashville is such a guitar city as well. Yeah. Like it's just, and then briefly too, while I was there, I worked at a guitar center. So I met up with all these guitar nerds and they would tell me like, oh yeah, a Gibson is this and the blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I'm just kind of soaking it all in. So that kind of intrigued all the things with guitar. And also,
we have a lot of parallels because I worked at the Hollywood store 20 years ago. So did you work on the guitar floor or where did you, on the acoustics? Where did you work?
I did operations and then they transferred me over to like accessories.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you ever have the computers go out and you had to do the handwritten tickets?
Oh no.
I always felt so sorry for accessories when that happened because everybody would just send everybody to accessories for any small purchase. Like go to accessories and then they had to fill out the thing. Yeah, you know what crazy. I'm talking about.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, I don't know. I think because I got paid as a songwriter at that point. It wasn't really like a super lucrative deal, but it was just like I needed something outside of the world that was presented to me, which was studios and producers. I just wanted to like work somewhere. And also, too, I was eyeing, you know, just learning about instruments in general. And I'm kind of a nerd that way. So if I don't really know much about something, I kind of dive into it.
That's awesome.
So there was this particular producer that I worked with that really inspired me to take on guitar, actually, and I would still credit his name's Ed Cash. And so he basically was one of the producers who started developing me, and that's kind of how it started. And I wasn't really confident in it, but I really pursued it.
What, even in the playing of it?
Wow.
Okay. Because you're so skilled. Like, I see you play, and I'm like, I can't imagine you not being confident in it because for me, I gravitated towards it right away, and I started with piano, and I just started running with it. But I've now come back to piano as to, like, reinforce those chops, too. But with you, it's such a natural part of you that I can't imagine you ever struggling with it, you know?
I mean, I think it's just confidence because it wasn't something that I, you know, grew up playing and writing with, right? So the piano lessons, it's almost comes in default in Filipino families. Like,
East Indian, so I know, I hear you what you're saying. This is like what you're supposed to do. And you know what's so funny? It's like, at least you got violin as like another instrument. Like for me, mine was clarinet, and that has helped me absolutely not in music because it's I'm not still playing the clarinet. I'm not even thinking of buying a clarinet for any reason, and it didn't enhance my guitar chops, my piano playing. It just was something for me to do to kind of like realize, okay, this is another facet. So at least you had violin to help you with guitar, because some of the fingering chops are great when you make those transitions, right?
Yeah, so violin definitely helped me, I guess, accelerate in learning guitar. I could imagine because of the fingering and how.
Yep.
And violin, to this day, I will still stand by it, that violin is exponentially harder than.
Oh, I would definitely agree with that.
Like if you don't rehearse that instrument, it's like you go back to the, you know, the basics. Like I mean I still have a violin, I would pick it up and I'm just like, wow, I'm so off now.
That's crazy, but it makes sense.
But yeah, so guitar is definitely and ever since then I've been writing mostly with guitar, and so Nashville is definitely a huge influence in why that is. And then when I went back here in Texas and did the YouTube thing, then Los Angeles started calling. Then all these different places started calling. And because of the Asian American community.
You got asked to stop by Southwest, right? Isn't that?
What?
Didn't you get asked to stop by Southwest because of the Asian community also supporting you?
Yes, but that even came later, you know. Wow. I think even before then, because, you know, YouTube started to happen and all these Asian American like artists and singers within a certain, I guess, age bracket, like millennial kids, started doing the same thing. And so it became like this online community. And then, yeah, and I would get like all these college gigs and festivals and events, all predominantly Asian American, which is ironic.
That's because, awesome.
You know, back in my day in Nashville, I was usually the only Asian in my, right. in the room, you know, right. and, yeah, and right. I've always been, you know, I guess I'm just so used to it. And I've also to backtrack. I grew up in different countries before Texas. My family lived in the Middle East, and then Bangladesh and Bangkok and all that
wow.
stuff. So I'm a third culture kid, essentially. So part of being a third culture kid is that you're kind of a loner by default, because
right.
as much as you saw the world and know different cultures, and you can feel comfortable being alone. And so with the Nashville situation, I found myself very, like, I guess, loner in the sense that I didn't see anybody else who looked like me.
Right,
in
right.
that circle. So when YouTube, fast forward to YouTube, then all these Asian Americans events started to happen. I would go to UC Irvine or NYU and, I don't know, Seattle or in Chicago, Urbana. And it's like all the diversity started to show up in my life.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and I've just kind of progressed and did that. And I started writing a lot in Los Angeles. And then a hotel cafe presented itself for me. And it's to this day still, you know, a dear institution in my heart.
Yeah.
I haven't played Hotel Cafe in so long, but...
Well, I want you to do one of my Songwriter in the Round Nights, because I just think you're... like an extraordinary songwriter. I just think you are just you're a talent that people need to hear more of. And what I love about what you do is, you know, we have this parallel because we both come from different cultures. Mm-hmm. But what's awesome about what we both do is, like, we actually don't play music from our culture. You know, we're actually like, and people ask me that all the time, like, how come you don't play Indian music? And I'm like, because that's not what I listen to. It's like, that has not even made my radar as far as the aspiration level of what yeah. I want to make. So I wanted to ask you that too, because, you know, I know you've gone to Filipino weddings or Filipino parties, and mm-hmm. you know some of the music, and, you know, you've been around it, but it wasn't on your radar for a reason. But the soul music and folk music was definitely on your radar. Tell me, like, what was the kind of like catalyst for you to want to write in that direction?
I think it's just my exposure growing up here in the Texas town that I'm in. It wasn't full of Filipino parties and all that stuff. So I was exposed to a lot of, you know, as much as we're not, our heritage come from different countries and different ethnicities. It's like, we still experience the American life.
Yes.
We
yes.
listen to pop radio. We listen yep. to, and then, you know, obviously I backtracked, you know, when I started doing music professionally, then somebody was telling me, oh, Melissa, you should listen to like the old stuff, like Billie Holiday and Ella yeah. Fitzgerald and Sarah Vaughan and all these vocal greats and just study how they sing. And that's what I did. You know, I'm just like, okay, let's do it. And so, yeah, I just kind of absorbed all those things, and especially too with, you know, if you grew up in church, you sing a lot of gospel music, you sing a right. lot of black music, right?
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's just the default. That's just part of the culture. And so,
you grew up in Texas, so it's definitely a part of the culture. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 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 And so it's not like I'm deterred by my music, the culture of the music and within my culture. It was just wasn't really part of my fabric. I didn't grow up in the Philippines. So my perspective is not necessarily truly Filipino or purist Filipino.
Right.
I do have older siblings, and my sister, I remember she would sing a lot of these, she would sing a lot more Filipino music. So I'm exposed to it, but it's not something that I would necessarily.
I have the same parallel. Yeah. It's like, people talk to me about Bollywood movies, and I'm like, huh? People talk to me about like Indian artists, I'm like, who? And it's not, I'm aware of it on some level, but not aware of it at all in the same way, because it's like my focus is more on like funk, soul, like world music, like in Western African stuff. But I just love that parallel, because you know, there's not a lot of artists I can talk to about that because, you know, they are not from a different culture. And it's like, when you see that, it's interesting. It's kind of like peculiar and awesome at the same time, because we should want to like write music of, you know, to our culture and, you know, direct them to that. But at the same time, that's what makes us, I guess, different in that regard, especially you coming from Texas, but living in all these other different lands and then doing soul music and going to Nashville. And yeah, you've had kind of like this eclectic musical adventure. And let's play something. What do you want to play first? Let's play something so people can get a taste of what you do. What do you want to play first? Your choice.
I want to start with an India RE one.
Okay.
Yeah, we started a song.
Yeah, give us a little backstory on it.
So I wrote this with India years ago, and she was still living in New York. And I was on tour, and she found out I was in New York. So I visited her place, and she was like, oh, let's write a song. And basically, we just talked for like 2 or 3 hours, I remember. And then this song just, I had a morsel of an idea for this one. And then I just showed it to her. I'm like, I don't know how to finish this song. And the reason, and also too, it's very folk influenced. And I told her that, you know, I have a love for Joni Mitchell. And she was like, I love Joni Mitchell. Like, so two very soulful, like, artists, India and I, and then wrote like a folk songwriting in terms of like format. And then years later, during pandemic 2020, I was just like, hey, can we do this as a single to release it as, you know, together? And so I basically just kind of put it together. We did it all remotely. She recorded her vocals separately, and then I also hired basically her guitarist in her band, who I also befriended on a tour with him. And it was just like one of the most, I don't know, rewarding for me, because I never thought I would work with somebody like her, because I look up to her. I mean, also too, back in Nashville, they were trying to develop me as an artist, and they didn't quite know what to do. They were very confused in hindsight. But there was a suggestion that I should work with India RE's producers, because her acoustic soul record was mostly written and recorded in Nashville.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So at that point, that was kind of like innovative, because Nashville wasn't known for soulful music. So acoustic soul was very much like ahead of its time at that point. And, you know, so they were trying to connect the dots that, like, it's acoustic, it's soulful, and it's folky. Work with India RE's musicians and producers. And then when that stuff was starting to roll out, then all the executives had to leave because there's a new regime coming over. And it was like an unfinished business at that point. And then years later, completely different reason why I met her. I met her and I worked with her, and I'm like, what? This is a weird turn of events. Now is like 16 and 17. That was the intention. And now
you willed it into its existence.
Yes. I mean, thanks to David Ryan Harris, because he was the one who introduced me to her.
We'll talk a little bit about David too. David's a very good friend of mine. But what's the name of this song? Let's play this real quick.
It's called We Started a Song. And it's basically just saying that a lot of our relationships, it's like songwriting. You start a lot of songs and you don't quite know if it's going to get finished or not. And you have to decide, should we finish this or just let it go or move on to the next one? So we were trying to kind of put that together lyrically, conceptually, and then in this folk aesthetic a la Joni Mitchell.
All right, here it comes.
Melody. I took the high note, you took the low. tried it then, we tried it now. Doesn't really matter, cause it's over now. When it all falls down, a song's undone, and all we have is.
So good. So beautiful. My goodness. That must have been like one of those things you were listening to 1,000 times when it was finished. Like, isn't that the best part of making a record? You just, when it, you see it all finished and you're like, you get to hear it before the world does and you just get to enjoy it. So you must have enjoyed that many times over once it was finished.
I mean, it was fun. It was definitely fun. And I remember recording that a lot during the pandemic, if I am correct. Yeah. So it's definitely like therapeutic to even like record that and, you know, be in contact with India, just trying to make sure that all the logistics were okay and all that stuff. So yeah, it was definitely like a dream collaboration for sure.
That's so awesome. And, you know, David Ryan Harris and I go way back. I actually first saw him playing the side stage at John Mayer's show in like 2000. It must have been 2003. And another friend of mine, Scott Little, who's also been on my radio show, David's also been on my radio show. He is from Atlanta. And so we were both working at Guitar Center. He's like, what are you doing on Friday? I said, man, I signed up on this songwriter's email list, David Ryan Harris. He's playing at the Temple Bar. And he was like, man, I was going to tell you, come with me to the Temple Bar to see this guy, David Ryan Harris. I want to introduce you. So I met David over 20 years ago, and I was like just starting with the band, we got to headline the House of Blues, and they were like, hey, you get to choose whoever you want to open. And he was the only person I thought of. I was like, the only one person I want to open for us, his name is David Ryan Harris. And so I asked David, I'm like, would you be down to open for us? And he was like, yes. David, to me, is the quintessential songwriter. Like, he is one of the best singers, one of the best writers, one of the best producers, one of the best guitarists. He's just like the complete songwriter. So I have so much love and respect for him. I was actually just texting him 2 days ago because he was in town and I missed it to see Madonna. I saw that Madonna on the same night. But I was so bummed because I didn't get to see him. But how did you cross paths with him? Was it Hotel Cafe? And I love that he produced one of your records, because like, what a perfect match, you know, artistically for you and he to kind of collaborate. How did you run into David Ryan Harris?
Oh, dude, this is a funny story. So I started going to Los Angeles to do some writing sessions and to do like songwriters rounds and all that stuff. I started playing at Room 5. A friend of mine hooked me up with the booking guy who used to do Room 5 and actually did my first, like, I guess, residency, like a weekly gig at Room 5. And this was when I had no, like, barely anybody, like, in the LA scene, right? So I was literally, like, building up my career. So this was a time. Do you remember Tumblr?
Yeah, of course. Old school.
Yeah. So DRH used to post a lot on Tumblr, and I'm on Tumblr. And, you know, that was when I was, like, I don't know. Like, and then there's like a thing, like a Q&A thing, like ask me any questions. Like I do that. And he did that. Right. So like ask questions for David Ryan Harris. And I'm sure that he had a lot. I think that he was in the middle of touring with John as well. And I've been a fan of David for a long time. Like,
oh, he's the best.
So I in my brain, I'm a huge fan, but I never thought I would actually work with him. It was one of those things. So I just like playfully just like answered it and said, not a question, but I would love to work with you. That is all. Bye.
that's a good question right there.
And then
you set it up.
And you know, like Tumblr had the thing where you can ask question anonymously or you can like not like it.
Yeah.
You know, like, so I made sure that it wasn't anonymous. It was from me because I was so shy. I was just like, oh my gosh, this is the only time. But anyways, I forgot about it. Like I didn't, once I sent that thing, I totally forgot about it until a friend of mine tweeted me and said, Melissa, is this you? And like sent me a link. I clicked on it and then David responded and said, yes, where do you live?
And you're like, oh my god, oh my god,
like, oh gosh, you know, literally I was like, I found out after like a Room 5 gig, and so I that's how it started. I messaged him and it's like, I'm in LA for like 3 months, would love to look, if you're in LA I would.
He's
love
so
to
awesome.
Yeah, so we set up a time to like meet up at his studio at his house, and you know, my Nashville mentality kicked in and like I was ready with my guitar and my laptop. I was like, okay, we're gonna write. I met up with him. I had all my gear for writing. But what was amazing about meeting up with him at that time, he just like sat me down and just like wanted to know my story. Like he just wanted to know me. Like,
yes.
So how did you start writing? Like, where did you? So I basically gave him the whole spiel that like what I told you about Nashville and all that stuff. And then after like an hour, he was like, okay, let's set up a writing session. I'm like, I wasn't used to that because in Nashville, it was like, you show up, you don't know.
Do this. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it's on schedule.
Yeah, you don't know who you're writing with, who they wrote with, what they did, what they accomplished and didn't accomplish, whatever. You show up, you write a song. You're like, and I was trained as a kid like that. Like it was like writing session in the morning, lunch, writing session in the afternoon, and maybe a demo vocal tracking thing in the evening. It's very like work ethic. But anyways, that always stood out with me with David. And ever since then, it was just like, oh, okay. Well, this is cool that we just kind of got to know each other. It was like...
He's the best.
Yeah.
And like, not only that, it's like, he is... Like, I don't say this about a lot of people, but he's one of the like biggest hearted people and one of the most soulful people that you'll ever cross paths with, just as far as his outlook on life. But then when you hear him sing, it's just like the world stops. It's just like one of those things that he just has... I embarrass him all the time whenever we hang out. I'm like, man, you're just so ridiculously good, like all the time. And, you know, I asked him to open for us at the House of Blues. I said, one condition. He said, what's that? I said, I want to sit in with you on your set on a song that I love of yours called Strong Enough. And I said, I want you to sit in with us on a song where you trade guitar solos and we kind of do this whole thing. He's like, cool, man. So I went over to his house. We're harmonizing on Strong Enough. And like, you know, I tell him, I still joke with him. Like, I was like starstruck singing with him because he's just, he's got such a great voice. But when he ended up sitting in with us, it was the craziest thing. And this was, none of it was planned. And I have to share this story because it's one of the coolest stories in 20 years of playing still to this day. So like everybody's jamming. My lead guitarist starts trading solos with David. David's trading solos with him. David gets behind my lead guitarist and starts playing his guitar around his back. And he says, just play, you know, just play your left hand. And so the guitarist is playing the left hand and David's playing the right. And then they switch hands and David's playing the left hand and the guitarist is playing the right hand. Unrehearsed, crowd went crazy. Still one of the coolest things I've ever seen. Only someone like David Ryan Harris can pull that off. And he's just like, he is to me the greatest. And I just love that you put your music in his hands because there's no safer hands I would ever think to put your music in. And he's that guy. So I have so much love and respect for him. He actually sang and played guitar on my last record. And I just think the world of him. So I love that you trusted him and worked with him and wrote with him because your styles of music too are so like, they're like reflections of each other. So it's so awesome.
I mean, go ahead.
What were you going to say?
I mean, we love David. I mean, that's just, he's
the best.
And
he's so respected with everybody. Like you ask anybody about Dave Ron Harris, like Derek Trucks, John Mayer, Maroon 5, they're like, oh my God, we love David Ryan Harris. It's like he's so respected and loved wherever he has been lucky to cross paths with these people. You know what I mean? Yeah. He's got that vibe.
The reason why I met India is because of him. He was working with her for the Songversation Records. And he actually flew to Atlanta to write with her, to do all the things with her. And
they've been friends for years, decades. Yes, yeah, yes. That's right.
And he randomly just called me. Like that was the year when I started like writing with him and stuff. And he just randomly called me. And I was like, he never calls out of the blue unless there's something happening. Right. So I'm like, hey, David, what's up? I was like, hey, so I'm in Atlanta and I just did a session with India Ari. It's like, oh, that's cool. It's like, I think I'm producing some of her records, you know, some of her tracks for the next one. It's like, oh, that's a big deal. Oh, yeah. But I called because she and I just spent like a good hour just watching your YouTube channel. And I'm like,
that's awesome. You're like, oh my God, I'm frozen. That's
awesome. That was like not expected. And so I think that's the reason why India knew about my music. And then like months later, we met in LA. And that's kind of how it started. I opened for David for one of his tours. And then I also ended up opening for India for one of her tours. So it's amazing. Just kind of like a cool little like, you know, family at this point. And you know, when I was recording with him, his one of his sons, Truman, was only like 3 years old.
Yeah.
And Truman was like, I don't know, somehow just had this infatuation with me that he named me like would crash studios, our studio session. And he couldn't pronounce Melissa, so he has a name for me called Issa. And awesome. So to this day, the Harris family still calls me Issa.
That's sweet.
Yeah. So like when David like texts me, "Hey Issa," so that's a thing. Like that's a cool thing with him, and it's just like it's more than just like a musician friendship, you know?
Yes. Yes.
And I've always felt just more welcomed and embraced and also advocated by him that he just like somehow believes in me. And
I mean, those are huge shoes that you know what I mean? It's like, that's a huge vote of confidence.
Yeah.
You know, and that as I know that, you know?
Yeah. And then like now it's like India as well. Like India is just, she asked me to be part of her tour just out of the blue. It could have been like a bigger artist. You know, I could have been a signed artist. It could have been anything. But I was one of the few openers that she lined up. And yeah, and she's just, I'm just, sometimes I don't recognize or I don't really like let it sink in that these people like believe in me because there's like definitely like imposter syndrome that I do go through.
And every artist goes through that.
Yeah. So to remind myself, like people like India and David, who are just like, they don't need to advocate for anybody. Like they're just, right. You know, so whoever they believe in, that's who they're going to believe in, you know? So
I remember David asked me, he was like, when we played at the House of Blues, he's like, how long do you want me to play? And I said, however long you want. If you want to play 2 hours, you want to play 3 hours, I'll even play 15 minutes if you want to play 3 hours. And he started laughing. And like we did this session, you know, on my latest record, Revolutions, with my band. And he was like, so what do you want me to do? I said, anything you want. You know, it's just like, yeah. He's one of those artists. Like, I just feel like you're lucky to be in the room with him. And if he's doing something creatively with you, you're extra lucky. And he's just one of those rare human beings and artists, and you know that too, so I love that you know that.
He's that dude too, that he's very opinionated. Like if you know him, he is so opinionated. So if he
that's what we love about him, you know what I mean? You need that.
Yeah. And also fun fact, he and I are working on a song. So
that's awesome.
And side note, I'm not even really supposed to release anything about it because we're still in the thick of it, but he has Greg Phelan Gaines play on it too,
That's amazing. That's awesome.
So we're still in the middle of everything, you know, trying to kind of just arrange things and stuff. But
Melissa, you and I have a lot of parallels. Greg actually came here and we wrote 5 songs together. We did. Oh, nice. So I'll have to show you those. You'll love them. But Greg is a monster. You know, Greg, Michael Jackson.
I don't know him personally. Yeah, of course.
Oh, my God. Like, He is. Okay, I'm going to give you a song to listen to, which is my favorite thing that I love all the Michael Jackson stuff. It's forever going to be the best. But if you listen to Chaka Khan doing We Can Work It Out, and just listen to Greg's left hand playing all the bass, it is unreal. You're going to love this song if you haven't heard it before. But my God, Greg Phelan Gaines playing the bass and playing all the parts. It's just the most incredible. You're just going to love it. You're just going to love it.
I'm sure. Yeah, so David, I asked David to produce one of my songs. And he just literally just said, he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to ask Greg to play keys on it.
It's so like, crazy.
Cool. Awesome. I'm excited about that. I'm hoping to release that within, obviously, this year. I just don't know. I kind of take it. I intuitively just kind of release things as they come. So, yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Well, let's play something else. What do you want to play next?
Let's do the song Try.
All right. Here's Melissa. Go ahead.
And that's a song that kind of, that's an anniversary like video. I wrote that a long time ago. And that was one of the songs that kind of just hit it on YouTube. So that was the first original song that I posted on YouTube. And then everybody started covering it. So I made that video to celebrate that song.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Here's Melissa Polinar with Try.
Something about you, the way you move, the way you look at me. There's something about the way you see things, it's like a change of scenery. Everything about you, help it, I can't tell you, I'll try to get pumpkins. Help it, I can't tell you what I try to get you off my mind. Tell me, move on and just live my life. I can't help it, I can't tell you.
So good. It's so good. My goodness. I was listening to that song earlier today because I was like checking out YouTube stuff. And I was like, man, you make it look so easy. It's not even fair. You just make it look so easy. It's not that easy, people. No, you do. You really make it look so comfortable. And how many takes did you do of that? Did you just kind of nail it on the first one? Or tell me you did at least four takes so that we can realize you're still human.
Well, I mean, we had to do one whole take, like, because it had to be a live recording, but we had to do multiple because the guy had, the videographer needed like different shots and stuff like that. So, I'm pretty sure it's more than four, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm doing this right now with a new series that I'm doing, and it's like, we've had to do about 3 to 5 takes almost every song, but it's like, sometimes I just wish you can just get it on the first one. Like, you know what I mean? It just it's so rare, but it's just like, it should be, you know, that feeling where you're like, we've been doing it long enough where it should just come out on the first take and it'd be done. You know what I mean?
Live videos are deceivingly harder.
Yes.
Yeah. Like then music videos, it's like once you plan everything, it's like lip sync your way through.
Yeah.
But like
there's an art to that too.
Yeah, but like an actual live performance is like I have to be like present with how I look, my positioning, also my vocal performance, and how you know, it's so taxing for me, to be honest. I mean, if I'm doing it like on stage without really thinking about like cameras and whatever, I do whatever I want, but in the context of like, this is an actual video that we're doing and we're posting it, it's harder for sure.
Well, I'm sure you also felt this because I'm feeling this now with going through this. It's like when you play live, it's like you can let it all hang out and it's like, okay, it's going to not be forever. It's here and it's just gone as soon as it happens.
Yeah.
Recording, like you can come back and listen to it and edit it. With video, it's a combination of like you want everything. It to be live and you want it to be sound good and you want it to look good because it's permanent. So it's a little bit of a struggle.
Pretty much.
Yeah. No.
But it was fun. That whole process and that whole session was so fun though, because I mean, I trust everybody in that room, like from the player, from the drummer, from the studio and the engineer that was in charge. It was hard, but at the same time, everybody made it easier too. So,
well, we're running out of time, but I want to play another song. What are you going to play next?
February song. And that's another live performance with my friend, John Splitoff. And that's a more recent one. It's with a pitch meeting band, based in Nashville. So we recorded this in the studio in Nashville.
All right, here's Melissa Polinar with February Song.
Come whisper softly, come sweep me off my feet. Go ahead, fulfill my dreams, betrayed through my fragile heart gently. I'm so through the hurricane. been in this storm for far too long. Come ease the hurt.
So fantastic. I got to clap it out for that. That was so good.
Thank you. Woo.
Melissa, where can people find you if they want to find you online?
I am on all social media platforms. Instagram, mpaulinar usually is my handle. Just my first initial, my last name. And Facebook's just /MelissaPaulinar, my whole entire name. So, yeah. And I have a website. You can Google.
And where can people find you? Were you playing live or anything like soon? What's your performance schedule looking like?
I don't have a lot. I don't have any at the moment because I'm concentrating on producing my music, new music and all that stuff. So,
yeah. Well, we can't wait to hear when it comes out. You have an open window, door, whatever it takes to get you back on Wake Up Hollywood, because you've been a wonderful guest. We waited a long time to have you, and we're so lucky that we finally got you on the show, because you are an extraordinary talent, and I wish you nothing but the best, and we'll have to make some music and do a show sometime soon. Absolutely.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Of course. On behalf of Sam, myself, and Melissa, we'll see you guys here next week. Peace, love, and take care. Ciao.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.